At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
11 years, that's how long it has taken to get Donna Adelson into a courtroom as a defendant. Think about that. Dan Markell was murdered in 2014. And in the decade since, we've watched a slow motion dismantling of the conspiracy prosecutors say tore his life apart. The hitman, convicted. Catherine McBona, the go-between, convicted. Charlie Adelson, Donna's son, convicted and serving life. And now, finally, it's Donna, the alleged matriarch, the money, the mastermind. But the timing here is more than coincidence. Prosecutors had to build this case brick by brick. They needed those prior trials, those prior testimonies to lock down evidence that they could use against Donna. You don't just pull the alleged ringleader on trial without making damn sure you can connect her to the crime. And that's what makes this moment so unusual. Most cases don't stretch across a decade. But this one had to. Because without the others going down first, prosecutors might not have had the leverage they needed. And then there's the other big development heading into trial. The battle over Wendy Adelson. Donna's own lawyers try to subpoena her daughter to testify in her defense. Wendy's attorneys fought it. The judge quashed it. And the result? Wendy won't be forced to stand up for mom. Or mother. Seems more appropriate here than Koberger, doesn't it? She may testify under the prosecution's control with immunity, but she's not getting dragged in by the defense. That fight says more about the family's dynamic than any courtroom transcript ever could. Imagine the optics for a jury, a daughter refusing to testify for her mother, while a convicted son, Charlie, is still willing to speak in her defense. That's not family solidarity. That's fracture. And fractures matter. Jurors notice silence, they notice absence, and they can read it as guilt louder than any testimony ever could. So, in this part of our conversation, I want to dig into the long game, why it took so long to bring Donna to trial, and how the failed attempt to pull Wendy onto the witness stand has already shifted the landscape before opening arguments even begin. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, joining us. And Bob, as a defense attorney, how unusual is it to see a case stretch out over more than a decade before a central figure finally goes to trial? And what does the subpoena fight with Wendy tell you about the cracks in Donna's defense strategy?
It's crazy. It's crazy that it's been going on that long. And it's probably the most interesting question that, because Georgie Kappelman asked a lot of really fascinating questions during the voir dire, but there was one particular prospective juror and she asked, oh, I see that you're 20 years old. She's like, so that means when this all happened that you were 9 years old. Do you care about anything that might have happened when you were 9 years old? Like, I mean, think about that. Yes. Like, it was a great question to ask, and it was like I was dying to hear the answer.
She's just slightly older than Wendy's kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, the closest thing that we see these days to something like this, where it's just kind of so many different defendants, and they have to obviously take some time in between trying them, and they're hoping that they can get, like, especially with a case like Donna's, where they had to kind of lock in these convictions, mm-hmm. get some testimony on the stand, get some sworn testimony on the stand so that they had enough to bring a case against Donna. They had to kind of build the case against Donna mm-hmm. by having the other trials take place. So, because like the other thing that we see where it may be a case where it happened a long time ago is where they finally solve a cold case, mm-hmm. you know, where it may have happened 15, 20 years ago. Technology in terms of DNA has allowed them to make an arrest, and now they're going to trial on something that happened forever ago. I mean, we've seen a few of those in recent memory, but you know, yeah, this in terms of this type of thing where there's this many players and they're trying them one after another over a period of a decade, mm-hmm. is really, really unusual and like fascinating.
Kind of like two questions here. Obviously, prosecutors are framing Donna kind of as the last piece of the puzzle here. My first question, and we'll go with it, is she the last piece of the puzzle? Or is she just the latest piece of the puzzle as we saw them kind of work their way through to Charlie eventually? And then now we're to Donna. Is there another domino that's going to fall here? Or do you think that the road ends with Donna?
Man, I mean, if you were a fly on the wall in Georgia Kappelman's house, you know that with all of her being, every fiber of it, she wants to get Wendy. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's any part of Georgia Kappelman that believes that Wendy did not have a hand in this. I mean, it was her kids.
Yeah.
Dan was her ex-husband. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's impossible for most people to believe that Grandma Gotti, that Donna was the one who really orchestrated all this, shy of not having any input with Wendy, that she was so hell-bent on having her grandchildren around her, like in her old age, because it was that important to her that she orchestrated this shit without Wendy having any knowledge of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hard thing to buy, but at the end of the day, a prosecutor is not going to move forward on a case unless they believe that they have enough evidence to get the win, to get the conviction. And that's the million-dollar question. That's what I was saying. Like, George is still hoping that something comes out at this trial that helps her move towards maybe even Harvey.
That's another domino, too. But I'm wondering, what do you think Georgia is maybe, is she betting on something happening here? Or is it just kind of a hope that maybe something slips out, something says is said the wrong way? Or do you think that there may be a direction here? There may be a strategy of we're going to go this way on Donna. And maybe by doing that, it's going to, you know, squirt some information out of here, out of her mouth. That's going to lead us to give us enough to pull the rug out from under Wendy or Harvey possibly.
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter, because I think that Georgia is of the mindset that Donna's going to testify. Charlie mm-hmm. testified at his own trial. I think Donna's going to have to try, as much as defense attorneys abhor putting their clients on the stand, and it's not related to innocence or guilt at all. It's related to the fact that when you get on that stand, if the jury doesn't like you, It really works against you. If your client gets up there and says something that could be construed in multiple ways, that can really hurt you. I mean, it's way easier for them to get up on the stand and make a mistake or be seen in a certain way by the jury that results in a conviction, that it's much safer just to keep them off the stand and make the state meet their burden.
Yeah.
So in this case, I think that Georgia's of the mindset, look, Donna's going to get on that stand and maybe she says something.
Yeah.
Maybe she slips up and says something that allows us to go after Wendy. And I think that the other part of it, in terms of the long-term strategy that Georgia has taken on these cases, is, you know, pressure makes diamonds. You know, like, she starts with Charlie and now she goes after the matriarch. And is it going to be a situation where if Wendy was involved, if Wendy was in the know, if Wendy had a hand in it, and both of them go down and they start resenting the fact that Wendy's out there living her best life while they're both rotting in prison for the rest of their lives, that one of them decides to turn state's evidence and testify against Wendy. I mean, you can't discount that. You can't discount that. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
And think about if you're Georgia and you get a conviction on Donna and then you go after Harvey, because Harvey, there's some interesting stuff that came out during Charlie's trial about how Harvey was the beneficiary of this birthday gift. And the birthday gift was going to be Dan Markell's death, which was resulting in his grandchildren being with him in his old age. So that came out in that trial. So there's some smoke there.
Yeah.
Now, if you're Donna and you're Charlie and you see that George is going to go after Harvey, does that put Donna in a position where if she's like, I orchestrated this whole thing. I can't have the love of my life, my life partner, my mm-hmm. soulmate. I can't have him go down for this. And does that have her come forward? Not so much to help Harvey, but to go to Kappelman and say, all right, I'm going to give you what you need. Harvey didn't have shit to do with this. I'm going to give up Wendy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's so many different ways that Georgia can play this to try to create the amount of pressure to get one or both of them to talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really a fascinating case, man. There's just so many tentacles.
There is. I mean, you got to dig into this and like absorb it for a couple days to kind of make sense of it. And we've been in it 100%. For a while now, but it was a very confusing one when I first started learning about it. Let's talk about, if Wendy were to testify, obviously there's already been some scuttlebutt about that, where she was trying to be subpoenaed by the defense of Donna Adelson. Her own attorneys came back and said, no, you're not going to do that. Give me some insight on this as a defense attorney, because on the outside, you're looking at it going, is there trouble in the enmeshed family paradise of the Adelsons? Or is this part of their strategy? How do you read that?
She's definitely going to testify. She's testified in all the trials.
Yeah.
So they give her an immunity deal. She's got use and, I believe, derivative use immunity, which essentially means use immunity. Immunity is when you testify in court on behalf of the Commonwealth or the state, and they cannot use what you testify to at trial against you to try you down the road, mm-hmm. okay? Derivative use immunity means that if information she testifies to at trial then causes them to go out and investigate based solely on what she said and they're able to secure evidence from that, they can't use that either. That's derivative use. It's derived mm-hmm. from her testimony. So she doesn't have full immunity.
Yeah.
So she does have those two. So from that perspective, fully expect to see Wendy on the stand again. And in this situation, what you had was defense counsel was trying to subpoena her so that they could call her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the strategy behind that is unknown, because it goes to what you were saying. Is there some kind of crack where they could try to widen the gap a little bit and get Wendy to say something that helps Donna? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but ultimately the judge ruled, look, you're going to have an opportunity to cross her. You know, that's all you're going to get. I'm not allowing you to subpoena and call her in your case in chief. Cause that was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
They really wanted to be able to call Wendy during their case in chief so that they could direct examine her, leaving her the ability to have more open-ended answers, because the difference between direct and cross is very narrowly tailored to where you're asking questions which theoretically should be answered with a yes or a no.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not, like typically during a good cross-examination, you're not leaving the ability for that person that's on the stand to go through long narrative type answers. Because you want to be able to control the flow of that. Whereas with a direct, you're allowing those long narrative answers. And I think from the defense's perspective, they view Wendy as helpful.
Yeah.
Okay. And they view Wendy as being able to get on the stand on direct and say, all right, well, Wendy, tell us why you know for a fact that your mother had no hand in this. Yeah. And then she goes through some long diatribe, because like that question, you're not going to be able to get on cross.
And that's where the weight of time really comes crashing down on Donna Adelson. This wasn't an overnight case. This was a prosecution strategy stretched across years, more than a decade, waiting for one conviction to stack on another until the walls closed in on the matriarch herself. Bob's point was clear. Prosecutors don't take this kind of gamble unless they're confident they've built a net tight enough to hold. And now Donna, she's in it. But even more telling is the family dynamics on display. Donna's lawyers wanted Wendy. They wanted her on the stand, maybe to shift blame, maybe to humanize Donna through her daughter. But Wendy's lawyers slammed that door shut, and the judge agreed. Wendy won't be testifying for her mother's defense. That refusal, that absence, carries more symbolic weight than most people realize. Because in a trial like this, jurors aren't just looking at evidence. They're looking at who stands with the accused and who doesn't. So you end up with this split-screen image. Charlie, the convicted son, ready to defend his mother, even from a prison cell. Wendy, the daughter, refusing to risk herself. That contrast could become one of the defining storylines of this trial. It's survival over loyalty. It's fracture instead of unity. And it undercuts one of the most powerful tools any defendant can have in front of a jury: the image of family standing beside them. That's the challenge for Donna's defense. They can argue about circumstantial evidence. They can pick apart witnesses, but they can't fix the optics of a daughter keeping her distance. And jurors, they feel that in their gut. Coming up next, we're going to go deeper into the heart of the Donna Adelson case and who Donna Adelson is, not the cardigan-wearing grandmother we see in the courtroom, but the woman revealed in her own words, the emails, the control, the manipulation, the patterns that prosecutors say prove she was the driving force behind the entire plot. Because if you want to understand how the family ends up in a courtroom like this, you have to start with Donna's grip on the people around her. Press subscribe so you don't miss that wherever you're listening or watching us. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi on YouTube or wherever you're downloading podcasts, or hey, both places. You can take us wherever you go, and let me know your thoughts in the comments on YouTube. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.